ओम ज्ञान सुमिरन्तस्य ज्ञानं जन शलाकाय चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Maharaj Yudhishthira can see that Arjuna doesn't look very happy. If someone's not very happy, you can usually understand by seeing them. That's described in the Nectar of Devotion, which is based on the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which is based on the Natya Shastra. And of course, the Natya Shastra is the science of dance or drama. But that, of course, is originally taken from the spiritual emotions, how different emotions are expressed. These are called anubhav, the expressions of different feelings in relationship with Krishna. For instance, if you see someone smiling, that's often an expression of humor. They're feeling something's funny. So how that's related to Krishna is because of Krishna's funny behavior or some jokes told maybe about others who are not very favorable to Krishna. Just like that, there's that saying, one of the gopis was saying to Kutila, the sister-in-law of Radharani, who was against Krishna's meeting with Radharani, that you're so beautiful, your voice sounds as beautiful as a frog's, and your breasts are long and drooping, just like a worn-out bag or something like this. Your belly is as large and beautiful as a drum. So considering this, you're so fantastically beautiful that only you among all the women in Vrindavan are not attracted to Krishna. So this is the kind of thing that you might laugh at. So there's a whole science to understand how emotions are expressed. Of course, someone may try to cover their feelings. That's also a large part of Radha Krishna Leela, how the gopis are trying to cover their feelings of attachment to Krishna. And if the elders see them exhibiting attachment to Krishna, they'll always have to try to make up some excuse like this. So this is, in ordinary life also, we see that even those who haven't studied all the science of rasa, you can also see if someone looks miserable, that they're miserable. If they look miserable, it probably means that they are miserable. It's not usually that someone looks miserable and isn't miserable. Sometimes someone may look happy, but they may be miserable. That's more common. Because they don't like to show that they're miserable. People like to cover up their emotions and show that they're actually unhappy, because everyone has to put on the show of being God. And God is happy. So they have to show that they're happy. Because happy means that, well, in material life, people think that you should be happy if you're, you know, you have enough money and enough sense enjoyment. So they don't like to show that they're unhappy, because then that would mean that they're not doing very well in the competition to be God. So they have to show that they're happy even if they're not happy. It's different in different cultures. In North Europe and America, it's more like that. Although there's an English saying to show the heart on the sleeve. That means not to hide, but it should be openly there. Everyone can see. So that among Latin people, if they're unhappy, they'll cry. If they're happy, they'll laugh and sing and dance. Whereas your Englishman, if it's just the same, he just keeps a straight face in either circumstance. Maybe he'll indulge in a slight quarter of a centimeter upturning of the lips if he's happy. In England, that's also called the British stiff upper lip. That means it's stiff, it never moves. So actually we see that Latin people, they very easily take to Krishna consciousness. They like to join in the dancing and the chanting, and they don't have any inhibition like that. They like to join in. Anyway, Arjuna, he's not feeling happy, he's feeling sad. So Maharaj Yudhishthira, he's trying to find out what is the cause of that. It may be to see that someone's unhappy, that may, of course, you may misjudge someone's emotions, but generally the emotions are expressed. There are certain expressions. So if you see someone's unhappy, then the next thing is you may want to find out why. Because you don't. Someone doesn't. Generally, if people is of good nature, he doesn't like to see people unhappy. So they may try to find out why, to maybe sympathize with them or alleviate their distress. Or in the case of Maharaj Yudhishthira, if Arjuna is unhappy, then because Arjuna is not just his brother, but very. It's not simply a bodily relationship like that. The dogs, they also have a bodily relationship, but the brother doesn't care for another. Even the mother doesn't care for the son. When the son's a little grown up, I've seen that, then they don't care. I saw in Russia, they were keeping one dog, and the mother was there with her son. The son was already completely grown up, bigger than the mother. So when they threw some bread, then they were fighting over it. It's not like the mother is saying, okay, let the son take, but they were fighting over it. And it's not that they were only gave them one piece of bread a day either. They also, it wasn't that they were starving them. So the relationship was very close. Here in this verse, twice Yudhishthira is addressing Arjuna Tata, which means like you'll address a darling child, a very much loved child. So as younger brother, he was treating him like that, very affectionate, especially because they lost their father in the early age. So Yudhishthira was like a father to his younger sons, younger brothers. In the absence of the father, the eldest son, he takes the place of the father in the family. So it's a very intimate and loving relationship, and apart from that, there was also the consideration that as the head of state or political leader, that Arjun was cooperating with Yudhishthira in managing the state. So if he was unhappy, that suggested that there's something that maybe he should be taking care of, as something wrong in the state. Of course, the other possible reason, he was giving so many different possibilities. The other possible reason is that Krishna has passed away. That's all. That's another way. That's the most important way that Yudhishthira and Arjuna were related, is that they were related as devotees, apart from their bodily relationship. Just like I was saying the other day, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He never thought of his father as an ordinary son might think of his father. He never thought of him in a mundane way, but he always respected him as an acharya and related with him like a disciple. You see that the young boys, they're sent to the Gurukul. They're sent at a young age, so the guru becomes like their father. Even age-wise, he will be like, usually at least like their father or older. So Maharaj Yudhishthira was trying to guess what are the causes of your despondency. And he's giving some different possibilities, that maybe you've been disrespected. In Gita, Krishna also says, for one who has been honored, dishonor is worse than death. Especially among Kshatriyas, I was speaking about the other yesterday, was it? How for the honor for a Kshatriya. That's actually a fact. For a Kshatriya, dishonor is worse than death. I think several times I told that story of the Rajput went out to fight with his army, went out from the palace, and he came back defeated. So, according to how the flag is kept, you understand whether you've been victorious, or if the flag should be flying high, but there's no flag. So it means they had not been victorious. So he came back and found all the gates of his city closed. And he was saying to open up, and he said, no, the queen has ordered not to open. He said, well, I'm the king, call the queen. You know, everyone knows he's the king. So queen came and said, what's going on? Why don't you let me in? I'm your husband, I'm the king. He said, you're not my husband. My husband would never come back from a battle defeated. He would either win or he would be killed. So he went back, he had no choice. He had to go back and fight, facing certain death. He had to go, and the queen knew also. So they also prepared their funeral pyre, and they all jumped. The queens, they all had to die rather than he be defeated. It's dishonorable. The honor was, well, that's one reason why, actually, his little bit of historical analysis, that because of this strong sense of honor, that's one reason why the Muslims became so strong, because of they were always, when the Rajputs weren't fighting the Muslims, they were always fighting each other, and so they became weakened, and the kings, they were all killing each other, and they'd rather die than lose their honor. So instead of having a united front to fight against the Mughals, they would, but then as soon as they'd finished fighting the Mughals, they'd fight each other, because it's, you know, they'd fight against the Mughals, and one would say that, yes, I won that battle, and say, you didn't win it, I won it, and then they'd start fighting, and, you know, like this. So it's Kshatriya honor, but there should be some discretion also. We see Yudhishthira became the king of the world, so he was sending around the challenge horse. So the kings, they had to submit. So you may think, well, it's not good to submit, it's against your honor. But there was nothing wrong in submitting to someone who's worth submitting to. That was the idea. But if the emperor, there's the kings, I mean sub-kings, and then the emperor. So if the emperor was, one could be a king under an emperor. King means Raja. And the emperor, the word is Samrat, which means the king of all the other kings. So one could submit if he was actually powerful enough to subdue you, and he was honorable and ruling according to religious principles, and he didn't torture you or disrespect you like that. So that was, but if one had too much strong sense of honor, then he couldn't submit. But that was the provision. Otherwise, every king would always be fighting with each other. That you could submit to someone honorable, who was worthy. It was not dishonorable to submit to a great Raja like Yudhishthira Maharaj. So Yudhishthira is asking that, have others disrespected and neglected you because of your long stay at Dwarka? He was thinking that's the possible reason. If you stay in a place a long time, people may disrespect you. Prabhupada explained that. For 3 days someone is a guest, if they stay longer, they're like a family member. You don't have to give them any special respect, and you might even say some things to them that they may not like. If one is honored as a guest for 3 days, but then after that, then that's not the rule that you should go. Of course, it may be different, just like Krishna. He went with all his queens to stay with Yudhishthira in Hastinapur. I mean, that's no small order to look after 16,108 queens with all their servants and the household. And not just look after, but up to the princely standard. But nevertheless, Yudhishthira was happy to have them. And they didn't like Krishna to go. When a guest leaves, you usually express some regret, please stay. But actually, you may want them to go. But Yudhishthira, he didn't want Krishna to go. You see, Kunti is praying, please don't go. So if you're actually honored and welcomed, then you may stay more time. But generally, if you stay a long time, even if you're a respected guest, the tendency is there that familiarity breeds contempt. So even Arjuna was such a close friend of Krishna, but Yudhishthira was wondering whether he'd been disrespected due to his long stay in one place, because familiarity breeds contempt. If you stay with the, because everyone has different idiosyncrasies, and if you see someone, you may think, why do they do like this? Why do they do like that? And you tend to find out some fault-finding tendency. Or you may think, well, you know, what's so, just like with the deity Prabhupada warned, that you may think, well, what's so special I'm worshipping? If you do every day, he warned, pujari should be very careful. That every day you're doing deity, so why should I bother? Why should I be so careful? A tendency may be that you think it's not such a special thing. He also warned that personal servants of the spiritual master should be very careful also, because that also that feeling may be there, that familiarity breeds contempt. So he eats, he sleeps, so why take him very special? He speaks about Krishna, I also speak about Krishna, I'm also doing. So that tendency may be there, that one may become disrespected. That happened with Prabhupada, actually. It's not recorded in full detail in the Prabhupada Lilamrita, how at one point some of his close disciples, they were disrespected. They actually locked Prabhupada up and made him a prisoner. It's not recorded. They wouldn't let him out. They wouldn't let him come and give class. So Prabhupada was very upset. He was thinking of leaving ISKCON. And he was thinking of leaving and just going back to India and just writing his books. But then he did something, and instead he gave them all sannyas. And said, now you go out and preach. He said, you're staying in one place, and now, you see, now for the first time ISKCON had some big property and many followers and there was some income. And Prabhupada said, you see, now you've become implicated in politics. So you take sannyas and you go out and preach. Don't stay any one place. You always just keep on traveling and preaching. Otherwise this tendency to become implicated in trying to control others and scheming and politicking. Prabhupada was very concerned. But he didn't give up the fight. But he tried to reform. So that... you see that tendency to insult others, or to familiarity breeds contempt if one has seen them too much. So Yudhishthira was wondering, has Arjuna been subjected to that? But then he thought, it's not very likely in Dwarka, because they're all friends of Krishna, relatives of Krishna. Apart from that, nothing auspicious can happen in the presence of Krishna. Although we see that even in Dwarka, that familiarity breeds contempt happened when something there was some inauspicious happenings. That Satrajit, he was killed, and the people of Dwarka they were thinking that. If the Samantaka jewel goes away, then there'll be inauspiciousness. Not thinking that, well, Krishna is here. If Krishna, whatever power is there in anything, the Samantaka jewel gives power, that there will be no drought or no inauspiciousness. But then they forgot that the power of everything comes from Krishna. So they were also bewildered. They also suffered from that familiarity breeds contempt syndrome, and thinking that there could be some auspiciousness, but they couldn't. Even the Dwarka was attacked by Shalva. So that appeared to be inauspicious. But it was never truly inauspicious because Krishna and Balaram, of course, Krishna wasn't there at the time. He came in the middle of the fight, but Balaram and Pradyumna, Aniruddha, they're all Vishnu Tattva. They were all there, protecting. So, of course, Dwarka is a very special place. Dwarka, Mathura, Puri, Navadvip, these are all very special places. Or any place where the Lord is worshipped. Prabhupada says, our temples, they're all like Vaikuntha, because the deity is here and the activities of Vaikuntha are going on. So they are special places, and the ordinary rules don't apply to them. But inasmuch as we are in material consciousness, we can still be affected, even if we're in the dham or even if we're in the temple. Sometimes people are surprised that, oh, you see, a member of ISKCON and they're doing this wrong or that wrong, but you may be a member, you may be living in the abode of the Lord and acting in His service, but if we maintain our material consciousness, then we're not in Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness doesn't necessarily mean living next to Krishna. Prabhupada gave the example, the bug is on the same throne as the king. He's closely associated with the king, he's on the same throne, but he doesn't have the same position. He simply gives pain by biting him. So one may be close to the Lord, but if he doesn't maintain proper consciousness, then he may be millions of miles away. He's maybe physically in proximity, but not mentally. We see that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his companion, Kala Krishna does. He was so intimately associated with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was traveling with him, and there was no one else traveling with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So how much intimate association he had. But he left. He fell into Maya. He didn't take the association very seriously or properly. They felt they didn't properly take his association. I came into the presence of Prabhupada a month before he passed away. We just arrived in the evening and left the next morning. Of course, we wanted to distribute, we knew Prabhupada wanted to distribute the book, so. But we didn't know, no one told us that Prabhupada had asked for all his disciples to come, but I could have spent that last month in the association of Prabhupada. No one told us. There was something going on, actually. They deliberately didn't tell. Prabhupada said he wanted all his disciples to come, but the GBCs didn't tell everybody because they thought, you know, we want our temples to go on and this and that. Hare Krishna. Unfortunately, we were unfortunate. Anyway, we were engaged in the service of Prabhupada. But then again, we may have become overly familiar. We may have thought that, oh, Prabhupada is there, so why should I bother spending so much time? I can go anytime. That feeling may come. We don't appreciate. Even sometimes people think that, just like Surab Damodar, he's saying that, oh, I'm in Maya now, but I'll come back in 2 or 3 years. He's taking it so cheaply that, oh, well, you know, I can take to Krishna consciousness anytime. It's all right. I can just change whenever. I just enjoy the material world a bit now, and then after some time when I feel like it, I'll come back, not thinking that Krishna consciousness is not such a cheap thing. You can pick it up or take it away. It depends on the mercy of Krishna and the Vaishnavas. And if you have such an attitude, you're not going to get the mercy. One of my godbrothers, he was, of course, he was initiated by Prabhupada, but then he went to Lalita Prasad, who was the son of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and took some Babaji initiation from him. There weren't many in those days. There were very few. It was a very unusual thing to do, to go and take initiation again like that. And then after some time of being a Babaji and having his Siddha Swarup and all this kind of thing, he went back to New York, and then some of our devotees met in there and they were talking. And he said, well, I think I've done enough Krishna consciousness for this lifetime. I think that's enough for this lifetime. Such an attitude. And he was becoming a big, another one became Babaji, and then he became a, now he's teaching Sanskrit at the university and criticizing Prabhupada, rascal. So, they have such a blasé attitude. You know that word blasé? It probably doesn't come in your language, it comes from French. It means, you know, don't care, couldn't care, everything's okay, couldn't care less kind of attitude. Not at all proper or respectful. They take Krishna consciousness as something very cheap. They get the gift of Krishna consciousness after many lifetimes. And then they think, okay, all right. I chanted Hare Krishna for a few years. All right, okay. Now I'll go back to being a karma. Such an attitude. Actually, there are many like that. And the worst thing is when they try to justify it. If they say, if they've fallen like that and they say, yes, I'm fallen, I'm very sinful, please forgive me, something like that. Well, that's not so bad. But if you say that, well, you know, there's nothing wrong in drinking and smoking, and there's nothing in Shastra against smoking cigarettes, and, you know, you're also, why are you showing that you're such a great devotee? You know, you're just making a show, you're wearing orange cloth, but are you free from material desires? And in this way they're trying to justify their position by various rascal ideas. So that's what it is. It's just rascaldom, that's all. Prabhupada said they're animals, such people. It was said that when Prabhupada was asked that if you don't follow after getting initiated, Prabhupada said, then they're animals, that's all. He said, because an animal cannot give a promise. A human being gives a promise. So you promise to follow all these rules and regulations and chant. And if you don't follow, then what are you? Of course, if devotees came in a... We see that if devotees, they'd fallen away and they came to Prabhupada in a humble mood, he was very accommodating. But if they came in a challenging mood, Prabhupada cut them like anything. He didn't tolerate. If they came to Prabhupada and they tried to criticize or justify their position or whatever, Prabhupada just... He would just have them taken away, thrown out of the room. He would smash them for a bit, and then if they didn't accept it, he wouldn't discuss with them. Because it's actually an insult to come. You accept someone as a guru, and then you want to challenge. You don't follow and you want to challenge him. So Prabhupada, being very merciful, the best way he could manifest to them his mercy to them in that situation was just to throw them out, because they're just making so many offenses in his presence. They're making offenses anyway, not in his presence. But if they make offenses directly to his face, it's more offensive. So that familiarity breeds contempt. That's being alluded to by Yudhishthira here. So we should be very careful, understand what a precious gift we have of Krishna consciousness, and not give it up for any worldly consideration. Hare Krishna. Any question about this? Some heavy topics today, but Krishna consciousness is heavy. It's a very serious thing. Very, very serious. Very responsible. You're not allowed to become an airline pilot unless you're trained, and also you have to see psychologically, are you a stable person? Anything, a soldier. You don't take people out of the crazy house and train them as soldiers. They have to see if they're psychologically stable, because it's a very responsible thing to be walking around with a gun. Policemen, you know. They have to be trustworthy, that they're going to fulfill their responsibility. That's what in the Vietnam War, they took boys out of the colleges and universities and then they stuck them in the army, and there were many cases of they would shoot their commander from behind in the battle.
They didn't like, you know, they hated being in the army, and they hated this guy telling them what to do. So it's in the battle, they just shoot him from behind. No one could say who shot him, but he was shot from behind, you can understand. There are many cases that they were shot by their own troops. So there wasn't the proper screening whether they're fit to be a soldier. So even in material life, you see, who's chosen to be the bodyguard for the Queen of England? Not just anyone. As Indira Gandhi was stupid. She kept Sikhs as bodyguards. After she stormed the most sacred temple in the Sikh religion and just completely filled it up with bullets and killed the chief, that, what was his name? Bindravali, the Sikh hero. So they killed him, but not surprisingly, about a month later, her Sikh bodyguard killed her. So, I mean, you have to choose someone. You have to see if someone's going to be taking a position. Even in the material world, it has to be seen if they're actually fit for that. They have to be very responsible. Another thing, who was that also? Was it Nasser? He was the Egyptian prime minister. Not Nasser, he died. Sadat or something. He was shot by his own troops. Another one. So you have to screen very carefully. Even to get a driving license, what to speak. Even to get a driving license, you have to be seen. You have to have if you're physically fit and if you're psychologically fit, because crazy man, you know. Like one of our devotees, I remember, he was telling me years ago, he was driving he was walking on Madras at night, and someone came in a car and drove at him, tried to kill him. Some drunk guy. So, even to get a driving license, you have to be responsible. You can misuse that position of a driver, what to speak of the position of being a bodyguard of the Queen of England or whatever. So, being a devotee, it means a very, very serious commitment, and one has to be responsible not to misuse that and not to turn against those he's supposed to be serving. Often we find very junior devotees, they're very eager to come and serve the guru and be close, but they don't actually know how to behave or what they're doing, or they're not trained, they're not responsible, and they do all kinds of stupid things. So it's a very responsible position to be closely associated with the guru or pujari, serving the deity. One shouldn't become overly familiar. You should know how to serve properly, and he should not become inimical or cynical. Hare Krishna. How to keep that mood? Well, that Krishna has described. Acharyam mam vijaniyam navamanyeta karyachit namartya buddhya suyeta sarvadevamayam guru. One should always consider the guru to be just as good as Krishna, not disrespected anyway. Never consider him an ordinary person, because he's the sum total of all the demigods. But Transcendental Diary you can read by Hari Shoy Prabhu. It's very nice how actually Prabhupada was very familiar and friendly with him, more than many of his servants. Some of them he was very familiar and friendly with from the early days, like Brahmananda, Hayagriva. But then later on, others who came, it's like Shuta Kirti, he always kept a mood of great awe and reverence. He hardly spoke in Prabhupada's presence. And Harikesh, Prabhupada used to chastise him a lot. But Hari Shoy, even though he was quite a young devotee when he became Prabhupada's servant, but Prabhupada liked to talk with him in a sometimes in a very familiar way, and it's like they got on with they got on with each other very well. But at the same time, Harishchandra Prabhu always maintained a mood of very great respectfulness, and he always thought of Prabhupada as the empowered acharya of the world, and he took it very seriously, his service. And Prabhupada took it very seriously also, his servant. He didn't like them doing anything even slightly wrong, because the servant, what's the use of the servant is supposed to be making life easier. Instead of, but if they don't do the right thing, then you make it more difficult. Or if they don't do something they're expected to do, then they make it more difficult. It's not that Prabhupada, in one sense, it wasn't that he needed it. I mean, he had lived alone, and he could do everything himself, could look after himself. He wasn't incapable. So practically, the job of a servant is to... you can do everything yourself, but on the other hand, if there is someone to look after travel arrangements, that's more like the job of the secretary. Of course, Prabhupada, he started taking massage. That was one of the major jobs of the servant. Prabhupada would have massage for several hours every day, actually, 2 to 3 hours, because he had that heart problem first when he was going on the boat. So that was very good. He felt that was very good for his health. And things like setting up the mosquito net, washing his cloth. And in the winter, he'd put the bucket in the sun so it would get a little bit warm. So he'd take a little bit warm bath. So Prabhupada could have done that, but on the other hand, as world acharya, he had so many things to do, so it's better that his time be spared. Plus, it's when you have disciples, it's the duty of the guru to engage them, to give them some service. It's his duty to have them serve him so that they can make advancement, also learn how to serve. So anyway, Harishchandra Prabhu is a very good example of someone who's living with Prabhupada very intimately, but at the same time always kept a very respectful mood. Shruti Kirti Prabhu also. Very respectful, always. But his mood was different to Harishchandra. Harishchandra would converse freely with Prabhupada. Converse freely means that he never became familiar, but if he saw that Prabhupada wanted to talk, then he would reciprocate it. If he saw that Prabhupada just wanted to be left alone, he would go out. Whereas Shruti Kirti, he described that if he saw that Prabhupada wanted to talk, he'd try to, but at the same time he wasn't, even though he can talk very freely with everyone, but he couldn't, with Prabhupada he was always in such a mood that he couldn't talk very freely. That's described also like the sons of Krishna in Dwaraka, that they're always very respectful. They look down, they just look at his feet, and they were always in a very respectful mood. They wouldn't become over familiar with him. So different people relate in different ways. And that was one of the wonderful gifts of Srila Prabhupada, that he was able to relate with so many different people in different ways. Not that he changed, not that he himself was different, it's not that he adjusted, that his own personality changed, but he was able to accommodate all different kinds of personalities. I was just reading something Dinabandhu Prabhu said about one of his friends from the hippie days, who's still a hippie. Must be more than 50 years old now. But he joined the devotees for some time. So he asked Prabhupada that, well, how can I surrender to Krishna? And Prabhupada paused. And I was thinking that Prabhupada could understand that he's not the kind of person who surrenders to anything. So Prabhupada paused for a moment. Then he smiled and said, chant and dance like a madman. Because he knew that this is something that he could relate to and he was doing. So if he told them that you should follow all the rules and regulations throughout your life, he'd be disappointed and defeated by such an order. Prabhupada told him, chant and dance like a madman, which was, for him, that was just exactly the perfect instruction. Because anyway, that was the main thing he liked about the devotees and the prasadam. That he liked that, and he was doing it, and he completely related with that. So Prabhupada was so perfect. He knew how to instruct everyone according to their needs. There's so many instances of that. Satsurva Maharaj also, there's another instance of that. That he was very much attached to reading different books before. He was just becoming a devotee. So he asked Prabhupada, what about all these different authors? And, now this is a very neophyte stage. They have expressed so many different realizations about life, and are they also not Krishna conscious? So Prabhupada said, their sincerity is their Krishna consciousness. So Satsurva Maharaj, in one of his books, he noted that Prabhupada was, he could understand that I was attached to all these different authors, so he didn't answer in such a way that he said, well, they're all nonsense, which is actually a fact. But he said, their sincerity is their Krishna. As much as they're sincere, that much they're Krishna conscious. Which is also true. You could say, very primary stage of Krishna consciousness. Whatever sincerity they have, which may not be much. Because often people, they'll write, there's one book, I didn't read it all, I read some of it, one of my god brothers said, it was interesting to read. It was called, a book called Intellectuals. And the first paragraph, it gives the mood for which the whole book should be read. It said that previously in traditional societies, people were judged according to fixed standard of morality, usually based in scripture. But as those norms, as those standards are no longer accepted, then if we are to judge people, we have to see by their behavior what they... You can't just judge people according to what they say, but you have to judge according to what they do. This is a very important point. Don't judge people just by what they say, but you see what they do. As so many people say, I love Prabhupada. Anyone can say, I love Prabhupada. What do they do? Do they follow as he instructed? So anyway, in this book, you have to see how they actually lived. So he gave a short biography of several of the most influential intellectuals in the last 100 years or so, including Tolstoy, then Norman Mailer, who was like one of the leaders of the hippie movement in some ways, I guess you could say. Sartre, Bertrand Russell, who's considered a great altruist, an avowed atheist, but a humanitarian. So then some woman called something Hella, who wrote dramas. So a few of them like this, and he noted like this author. He's a Harvard professor. I can't remember his name. He noted like the high things they wrote about and spoke about. And then he saw their actual lives. And in their actual lives, they're all debauchees. Every one of them. And debauchee means you're just having sex left, right, and center. So, he said, like Sartre, he said, he found some passages where he actually admitted that he made up his philosophy to justify his way of life, because he was a university professor. And, you know, there are young girls in the university. And he was enjoying it. So he had his philosophy to explain this, and how he lived with some woman for so many years. And he was having so many other women also. And then after so many years of having children, he just dumped her. And these are the kind of people that are setting the standard for modern life, which is a normal thing. As I just read in BTG yesterday, one woman is giving her life story. That after 24 years of marriage, I divorced my husband. He wasn't a bad guy, but he wasn't interested in spiritual life, so I divorced him. This is, you know, giving the Hare Krishna devotee speaking to the world. This is
This is our standard. That if your husband is, if he's not spiritual enough, you can divorce him. It's in BTG, you see. This is ISKCON in the 21st century. So he was analyzing how all these intellectuals, they speak so many high things, but they're just interested in sex, they're animals. Very interesting book. Interesting analysis. In America there are different groups of people. There are like the liberals who, they just, have sex left, right and center, it's okay, everything's all right. Well, also there's the Republican Party has Christian values, and they're still power. Republican just got in, and they believe in morality, family values, Christian influence very much so. Still Islam. I just got a letter from one of my disciples from Russia, who's Russian, but I think she's somewhat Caucasian. You know, Caucasian means they're all in Central Asia. Central Asian Caucasia, Georgia, Armenia, all these places. So she was saying that even now, in those areas, the women, they can't look at men. They have to keep covered like this. So even now they have those values. So even now in America, despite so much liberalism, there's still very strong group who want to be traditional. They don't like modern society the way it is.
There is
man.
You talk about these soldiers.
Yeah.
They should be normal or civil. You see, I don't want to judge, but we see now movement practice.
Tamil presidents are psychologically imbalanced, yes. GBCs. Someone told me recently that they gave the name of some psychological disorder. I can't remember the name. One of us. No, there are so many. I can't remember what it was exactly. I think it's when Sannyasi was telling me. See, he gave the name of one of the GBCs. He says, "Oh, he has this."
She's a friend.
Huh?
She's a friend.
She? No, it wasn't a she. It was a he. Of course, the fact that there's a she on the GBC makes me think. Maybe they're all crazy. It's being taped. Oh well. Put it on the internet. What does it matter? Some kind of syndrome where you always have to. What is it? I don't know. I can't remember something. You always have to show you're better than someone else or something. There's someone who has like a strong craving for power. They may that's like abnormal to be like always wanting to control others, but naturally they tend to get in positions of control. Because they have a strong desire for it. I mean, everyone has some desire, but if you just want to control people for the sake of controlling them, it's usually not very pleasant for the people you're controlling. That's why a leader in Krishna consciousness, he should actually think of himself as a servant of everybody else. Not only a leader, everyone should think of themselves as servants. That's why some people say they don't like organized religion, because these things tend to creep in. That's why we often say when people come and they protest to us, "I don't like organized religion." Say, "Oh, you'll love our movement."
It's so disorganized. But it is, it's a dilemma. If you don't organize, then how are you going to preach effectively? How are you going to spread Krishna consciousness to others? Unless there's some plan, some system, some organization. But as soon as you have an organization, then the negative points of organizations tend to creep in. So what's the solution? Haranama, 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 Eva Kevalam means that have a lot of kirtan and then that one. And then hopefully that will make the people who are mentally disordered less so. And even if not, then at least you're having a good kirtan. And you can tolerate all the discrepancies. It's difficult. Can be difficult. We're not pretending that it's utopia. Prabhupada wrote several times to his disciples that it's unrealistic to expect utopia. Of course, you might expect some kind of normal dealings. Even then, you'll find, I would say probably most families nowadays, that there's strain and disagreement in the world, many people, they feel more happy at work because, especially if it's like some progressive company that's making a lot of money, and like then there's a chance to go ahead, and they kind of lose themselves in their work. And of course, many people in work, it's also, it's not a functional atmosphere, but such companies, they don't last usually if all the people are fighting with each other. And families that are dysfunctional, they don't last either. So the emphasis in modern life is more on being a success in your work than having a normal family life. So you often find that people are successful at work, their family life is it's a mess. And they try to compensate for that by giving money. But it doesn't work. Whereas the families that struggle together, they're better. Anyway, modern society is a mess. And if our society has various disorders, well, it also reflects the greater society. People are coming to our movement from all kinds of... Mostly they're coming because they're suffering. And they're suffering because of these kind of things. They're coming from a disordered and unhappy background. People come for different reasons. What to do? We should try and work on at least where we are and the group of devotees we're in to try to make an atmosphere that is conducive to Krishna consciousness and not. On the one hand, management is required, but on the other hand, this controlling people just for the sake of controlling them is not pleasant. Management means controlling. Some measure of controlling has to be there. So we should try ourselves to. I just got a letter also from one disciple who's saying that, you know, I don't feel very nice relationships among the devotees, but I was saying, well, I wrote back and said that, well, it may be that the devotee, you find they're selfish and impersonal. But unless you, maybe they're having problems themselves, unless you try and open up to them, then you're also selfish and impersonal. Everyone's blaming everyone else for being selfish and impersonal, but who's going to take the step to try and appreciate the other devotees' problems and try, even though they may not be treating you so nicely, to try and come forward and bring out the best in them and try to rectify the situation by your own good behavior and personal dealings. So the solution lies in every one of us. Although we may want, if someone is, you know, there are, we do find within our movement some people who are very difficult to deal with, and we may want to keep a distance from them. If we can't, you know, if we can't influence them to change, and if we find it's too disturbing, then we may want to keep some distance. But we don't want to put everyone in that category, because we have to live with someone. We have to live with devotees, those who are interested in Krishna consciousness. Okay, I'm going to stop there. It's having long sessions these days. Long classes. Lots of long questions and answer sessions, more than anything. That's nice and easy. Your brains are alive thinking about the philosophy.